Hey everyone, you're listening to On Their Behalf, formerly known as DNA, a True Crime Podcast. Please enjoy.
So, would you rather never be able to speak again or have to say every single thing that crosses your mind?
I would rather say everything that crosses my mind. Because
you're nicer than me.
Yes, I'm the good twin, you're the bad twin. Maybe we should explain that, because that's going to make no sense to anybody. But the reason is because I feel like what I could do is I could teach myself not to think, like, to say things first. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Like, but not so, like, ever being able to say anything would drive me crazy.
Really,
but
really, like, drive home and, like, the meditation and become, like, a Zen master.
So exactly.
That, like, your thoughts actually enter your mind.
Exactly.
That is a lot of work. See, for me, I'm like, I would just choose to learn American Sign Language.
Oh.
And then hack the system.
Yeah. How hard is that? How is it harder to learn?
I feel like it's harder to learn how to shut your thoughts off
than it would be
than it
to,
is to learn another language.
Okay. So there really is no easy way out in this, I don't think. They're both incredibly difficult.
I do feel like more people speak with language than have mastered, like, meditation and can put a true filter on like that.
Yeah, true.
But it's also, like, your nature is much more nice and forgiving than my nature is. So, yeah. Like, you already are, like, 10 steps ahead of where I would be on that journey.
Yeah. So. Yeah, definitely. Well, the explanation to that is Devin and I used to work on a TV show together, and our showrunner used to call her the bad twin and me the good twin, because I was always like, glass half full. Like, yeah, maybe this guy didn't really murder this lady. And then she's like, no,
I would
he's
throw
a murderer.
The glass on the ground and shatter it.
Yeah.
Be like, there is no glass.
There is no glass. So that was what she used to call us, the good twin and bad twin.
So it's very apt.
Yeah, definitely. Well, welcome to another episode of our podcast.
Episode 6. Can you believe it?
I can't.
We've made it.
We made it past 5, so I think we're good.
Past 5. Yeah. Asia, what are we talking about today?
This is a heavy one. I mean, not that they're not, they're all heavy.
When is it not? Yeah.
So, so this case, you know, I heard of before, but only because it was kind of overshadowed by another case. And just like in our first episode with Ramona Moore, this story runs parallel to another case, but received drastically different media and police attention. So this week I'm going to tell you the murder of Evelyn Hernandez and the missing white woman syndrome. I was actually researching this case when we first decided to do the podcast, so just a little backstory here for all of our listeners. Devin and I were dealing with the oh-so-fun unemployment life of being an assistant in the TV biz, and one day I texted her because we were just talking about, like, how terrible things were going, and I texted her just, like, as a joke, kind of, like, since we have the free time, do you want to start a true crime podcast with me? And I totally thought she was going to say, like, no, like, that's too much. Or, like, I don't feel like that's not, like, my thing. And she, her response in all caps was, OMG, yes. And I was like, okay. So it did take us, what, like 4 months almost to like get it up and running, yeah, and like, you know, but during that time I had been like just putting certain cases like into like a little folder just to like have stuff to bring to you to be like, what case do you want to cover for our first episode? I had like this list and shoot, and this case, Evelyn Hernandez, was one of the cases, and it was also the inspiration for like some of the names for our podcast that I wanted to do. So mm-hmm. I had one of the first ones was I wanted to name the podcast The Others, because Evelyn Hernandez is known as the other Lacey Peterson. So, but I decided that that's super insulting and, nobody should be considered an other because, you know, like both of them should get the same.
Yeah. It was kind attention. Of a misnomer.
Yeah. So,
and yeah, also there's a famous movie called The Others that freaks me out. So
yes. And I think there's a TV show.
Lots
too.
Of reasons we didn't go with it.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Strong name.
But
not right for this.
Yeah.
We like our name.
Yes. And actually DNA came from, it was an absolute mistake.
not a mistake.
It wasn't a mistake, but it was definitely not intentional, I should say. Like right.
It was perfect.
Yeah.
Inspiration.
I was running. I don't know where I was going, but I was like doing some stuff for the podcast, like prepping some things that we needed done. And on my computer, I just had like a bunch of things open. So I closed everything and put it in a folder and labeled the folder DNA podcast just to like label it something. And then I looked at it and I was like, what did Perfect. I just do? I think I just named Perfect. Our podcast. And you had the
we
same.
We had so many meetings about like branding and names and all this stuff. And we could not think of anything.
It was
well,
so.
Well, no, we could think of a lot of things, but nothing that was like right.
Yeah.
And then like you just did that and it was like kismet.
Yeah. Ugh, and I told kiss. You, I told you, we went out somewhere together and I was like, I think I just accidentally named our podcast. And you were like, what?
Yeah.
And I was like.
Back in the days when we could go out.
Yeah. When we weren't quarantined. and you were like, you had the same reaction that I did when I first typed it. And you were like, oh, that's perfect. And I was like, so I know. I will go into a little bit of Lacey Peterson's case, but obviously I want to talk more about Evelyn. You know, I feel like we've done a really good job so far with this podcast of like, even though most of our cases can be compared to another case of a white woman, but like we've done a good job as showing the comparison, but also showing both stories the respect and attention mm-hmm. that they deserve. So we will continue to do that. So I will touch a little bit on what happened to Lacey, but it was so like it was covered on like everybody knew who Lacey Peterson was.
Yeah.
So. Let's get a little bit into who Evelyn was. And Evelyn doesn't even have a Wikipedia page.
Really?
Yeah. There's no Wikipedia Wow. page about Evelyn Hernandez. But if you look up...
Can we start one?
I don't... Can we?
I mean, you're supposed to be able to.
I would... Yeah. But I mean, there's so
Maybe
much...
Let's try.
We could try. But... With my research, I found that there's really not a lot about her other than, you know, obviously what happened. And it's oh, like every article you read about her is that same thing of like she's the other Lacey Peterson and they compare her case mm-hmm. to Lacey's. And then Lacey's case just overshadows her for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be difficult to find a lot about her. But what I did find... So Evelyn was from El Salvador. She moved to the U.S. when she was 14 years old. She attended the San Francisco Mikatir High School. She became pregnant when she was 17 with her son, Alexis. Mm-hmm. She was a trained vocational nurse, and she also worked at Clift Royal Sonesta. Hotel and Costco. Like, she was a hustler.
I've been to the Clift Hotel.
Really?
Yeah, in San Francisco.
I haven't. I lived there for 4 or 5 years and never went. Bar. Like, I had no idea. I had to look it up.
What year, whenabouts was this?
This was 2002, 2003. Well, everything spans between 2002 and 2003.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. And she worked at Costco too. So she was like a hustler. She like just had, you know, a bunch of jobs just to like take care of her family and support her family. Mm-hmm. Some sources claim that her English still wasn't as great, even though she had been in the U.S. Since the age of 14. But she was described as warm, calm, and likable. She was usually seen with a wide grin on her face. So when her son turned 5, they moved to the Crocker Amazon neighborhood in SF. I went to school in SF, so I know exactly where this is. I used to live in South San Francisco, so I used to take the BART right down, like right through the Mission. So this is like the Mission area. She had a boyfriend that also lived in that area. His name was Herman Aguilera. He is now 37, a limo company employee, according to an article written by Beth Spotswood. He was also an airline mechanic, but I wasn't able to really find much about him other than his connections to this case. So, so this is where things get a little gray, and I hate talking about these parts of cases because what was going on in her life at the time, yes, it can lead to finding out who did this to her, but it's like it doesn't define who she was. And it doesn't mean that because of this situation that she was in, like, was the reason that she should have received less attention or less police attention or media attention. So she was 24 when she went missing and was pregnant at the time. And this, like, when you were telling your story last week, I was like, oh, great, we're going to do 2 pregnancy stories in a row. But sorry, I had already started my research for it. So according to her family and friends, she was really excited about having another baby. And she planned on naming him Fernando. Apparently, Herman, her boyfriend, wasn't really excited about the pregnancy. And Evelyn was kind of like confused by this. Like, she was like, what? I don't understand, like, why you're not happy about our baby. So she called his mom and was like, you know, do you know, like, is there something bothering him? Like, does he not want children? Like, do you know anything? And her mother reveals, or his mother reveals to her, it's because he's already married. And which is also kind of confusing to me. So, like, how did she have, like, his mom's information? And, like, this mom...
Maybe she went into his phone. Like, we don't know
how
she got the mom's phone number.
And, like, how shocked is, also, is like, this mother to be like, stuff, who is this person? Like, who are you? Like, you know.
Oh, my God.
But how devastating is it to find out that, you know, the person that you're with.
But smart of her to call the mom because, you know what, moms are straight shooters.
Yeah, and she'll tell you how it is.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. It's so sad. So, and obviously up until this point, she didn't know that he was married until she spoke to his mother. And allegedly his wife knew that he was seeing Evelyn, but didn't know that she was pregnant until the police told her that Evelyn was pregnant. So, like, I feel like that's all a very, like, he said, she said kind of thing. And, like, nobody really knows, like, who knew what and when. And I think that that muddies a lot of, you know, the focus of where the police should have gone once they figured out what was happening. But I feel like it's kind of clear about, like, this was obviously not a great situation. And, anyway. So, you know, the whole situation just felt like it went south after everybody found out she was pregnant. So this was, you know, not easy on her and Herman and their relationship. And I'm sure that if, like, she didn't get pregnant, that, you know, everything kind of would have just continued as it was. Like, he would have kept seeing her, the wife would have kept ignoring it, and nobody would have saw any different. You know, it was just like everybody's was going to do what they were doing. But her her pregnancy through was just a factor that, like, couldn't be ignored. So it was, I'm sure within this time, because she isn't, she's 8 months pregnant when she's found. So, like, there's, like, a long time from the time he knew she was pregnant. So, so on May 7th, 2002, which was Evelyn's due date, her boyfriend, Herman, reports her missing, her and her son missing. So Alexis was with her. According to the SF police, she was seen, she was last seen picking up Alexis from his elementary school in the Mission District. And on May 1st, that was on May 1st, and she also spoke to some family members that day, but was never heard from after that point. They were planning a baby shower for her too, so it just, like, her, like, getting up and leaving was just not something that made sense. So a few days after she disappeared, a wallet with some cash and a disability check in Evelyn's name was found in South San Francisco. And get this, it was only a few blocks from Herman's limo company.
So where was it from where you lived?
I don't know. I should have looked that up, actually. I lived I lived right by the South San Francisco BART station, so I'm not, like, I didn't go into, like, the South San Francisco area that much. I just, like, lived there, jumped on the BART, and went into the city mostly, so. But maybe it's super close. I don't know. But
just a few blocks from his limo
company. Yeah, it was in a parking lot a few blocks from his limo company.
Wow.
So the police didn't suspect any foul play until they found the wallet so close to his job, because they basically just assumed that, you know, because he was married and she had family back in El Salvador, that she might have just said, you know what, screw this, I'm out, kind of thing. So, but then the, you know, the wallet showed up and they were kind of like, this is a little weird. And his wife, Herman's wife, apparently provided his alibi for the time of their disappearance. But I don't know. I don't know. I just feel like,
I mean, listen, I don't know the full story yet, but, like, if she's willing to, like, turn a blind eye when her husband has a mistress, like, it wouldn't surprise me if she also would be willing to cover for him.
Exactly. So I felt like that too, and that's why I was just like, and I just don't like the idea of a spouse being able to, you know, give you an alibi without a secondary alibi as well. Because, like you said, she's willing, like, so if she's going to provide him with, like, yes, he was home with me, that should not be something that's like, oh, okay, she's telling the truth and he's telling the truth. There has to be somebody else involved saying, like, yes, I also know that he was home, or they, you know, because she's, like you said, she's a spouse, she's willing to lie for him, and she's also turned,
I feel like, in a lot of cases, yes, but there's also a lot of cases where that would just cause so much red tape.
But they do it for,
actually let people go.
True. It's also, like, with spousal privilege in court, like, you can't testify against or for your spouse for that reason, because they are more likely to lie for you, or they're more likely to have some sort of vendetta against you and lie on the stand against you. And it creates way too much, like, reasonable doubt on either side that you're not allowed to, you know, testify.
Right.
For I'm your just saying spouse. That so if why I is came, it a, if why is it
cops a, came to me and accused me of being a crime, and I was like, I've literally been home for 4 months with my fiance. Mm-hmm. And Gabe's like, yes, I can verify that. And they say, we need a third person to verify that. I don't have a third person that I talk to.
No, but like, I just feel like in cases
I know
like
what you
this,
mean. I know what just... you mean that it shouldn't be a closed book.
Mm-hmm. And
but I do understand why.
Yeah.
Like,
I could I understand both sides, but I think that.
Yeah.
Then in that case, like in this case, they just knowing that she turned a blind eye to the affair, she, you know, like she's willing to kind of just play Switzerland just to not be involved and not have any, you know, confrontation with her and her husband or anything at all. So that should play into their suspicion of maybe he did do this, or maybe he is involved and she's covering for him. But that never happened.
It didn't?
No.
It never happened? I thought you were going to say
no, that never else. They Dang. So, like...
All right.
So, there was no warrant ever issued for his arrest, and there was no... I mean, there was no forensic evidence connecting him to the crime, but there was, like, he had motive. They didn't go any further than they should. I feel like they should have went a little bit further into investigating him. He was described as, quote, not a serious suspect.
Okay.
What the fuck does that mean?
That seems fishy.
Yeah. Like, what does that mean? He's not a serious suspect, but he's kind of like honorary. Yeah. Like, what does that mean?
A little bit of like a goofy suspect.
Yeah. Like, whatever.
He's a silly suspect.
So the police, like I said, they thought she took off, but then they thought, like, with this wallet showing up, then maybe, like, there's no way she would have been able to fly without money or her wallet. But that definitely went out the window when on July 24th, 2002, just a few months after she went missing, a partial decomposed body was found beneath the Bay Bridge along the San Francisco Embarcadero. DNA testing confirmed that the legs and the torso that washed up under the bridge belonged to Evelyn Hernandez.
Oh, my God.
Her full term unborn child, as well as her son, Alexis, are still missing to this day.
What?
Yeah. I have chills just saying that again. Ugh. Now Alexis would be 23, and the baby would be 17. This terrifies me. Like, I got the chill saying that because it's just so scary to think that, like, these two children could be out in the world somewhere. But it also reminds me of this case that I heard on another podcast. It's called Someone Knows Something. If you haven't listened to it, you have to. It's so good. But it's the case about Adrian McNaughton. He was a five-year-old, and he went fishing with his family, like his dad and his siblings, I think. I'm a little fuzzy on the details because I haven't heard that podcast in a while, and I think it was like their first season of like five or six seasons that they've done, so it's been a while. But I think he went fishing with his dad and his siblings, and then he didn't want to go on the boat for some reason. So his dad like sent him back to the car where his like sibling, one of his other siblings were. And the dad said like, yeah, I saw him head back to the car. He sat on a rock that was like right near the car. And then he said, I turned around a few minutes later and he was gone, and they never saw him again.
Oh, my God.
But throughout the podcast, they uncover that, you know, he might have been either kidnapped or maybe he fell because the water was near there as well. So they were like, he could have fell and hit his head and was unconscious and then drowned in the water. And there's so many different, like, theories as to what could have happened if he fell into the water.
Yeah.
And I think they even drained the lake at some point or strained it at some point just to see if they could find any remains, and they were unsuccessful. But the theory that he because the car where they were was also near the road. So the theory is that like he just walked up to the road just like exploring as like a 5-year-old, mm-hmm. and somebody driving past just picked him up and he was never seen again. But they said that he, like, during the podcast, that he would have been 50 years old, because I think this happened in the 70s. So, at this point, he would be 50, in his 50s, and he could have no idea that, like, he's Adrian McNaughton, because as a 5-year-old, it's super easy to tell, you know, they're like
to
clay.
To rewrite that
you can, narrative. Yeah, you can rewrite their entire life and be like, now your name is John Smith, or whatever. And
have you ever read The Girl on the Milk Carton?
No, but I've
it's
heard of
like
it.
That story where like a young girl is kidnapped and she's a teenager and she's happy with her parents, and then one day on the milk carton she sees her own photo.
She realizes
the parents she's living with kidnapped her.
I didn't read that book, but I think there's like a Lifetime movie that I've watched.
Probably. I read it when I was like 11 or something.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I've seen a Lifetime movie that has
literature. Yeah.
But isn't that crazy? Like, if Alexis and the baby are still alive, they could very well still be out there.
The baby, definitely.
Yeah, and they just don't know who they are. It's so scary to me, like, that thought. Yeah. So that's pretty much what I could gather from Evelyn, like what happened to Evelyn, because her case is unfortunately still unsolved. There was an investigation, a small investigation involving, you know, her boyfriend, just to see if there was any leads there. And it.
I can't believe that's it.
Yeah. So I'll go into a little bit about Lacey's case, because It mirrors, you know, in her case as well. Like, a lot of it is the same. Lacey Denise Rocha, she was born May 4th, 1975. She married Scott Peterson, making her Lacey Peterson, on August 9th, 1997. So prosecutors stated that even before they were married, he had already engaged in like two other affairs before they were even married. They don't detail any names or anything like that, but he was definitely cheating from the start. Lacey took a part-time job as a substitute teacher, and Scott got a job at Trade Corp. It's like a fertilizer company. Lacey's family and younger sister and everybody said that she was really excited to be like a teacher and be like a really badass housewife and mom. So she loved cooking and entertaining, and she wanted that like glowy lifestyle, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in 2002, she revealed to her family that she was pregnant. The couple planned on naming their son Connor. In November 2002, she was 7 months pregnant. This is when Scott decided to start another extramarital affair. He met a massage therapist. Her name was Amber Frey. And
no offense to Amber's out there, but of course her name was Amber.
Yeah, right. but apparently he told her he was single at the time, so that's why she started a relationship with him. The last time...
And of course his name was Scott.
Anybody Scott or Amber, don't listen to this podcast.
No offense. I probably love you.
Yeah.
I'm the asshole, remember?
Yes. I'm the good twin. She's the bad twin.
Yeah.
The last time Scott... or like anybody saw Lacey and Scott together was during a 3-day weekend that they all spent in Carmel, California. And this was the Christmas, the week before Christmas. And on December 23rd is when, or I'm sorry, December 24th is when she went missing. But the day before they did, her sister did see her because she was a beautician. So she cut, Scott's hair the day before. Scott later told the police that he last saw his wife at 9:30 a.m. on the 24th. He left to go fishing, and he said that Lacey was watching a cooking show, and she was about to mop the floor, bake cookies, and walk the family dog. And he went...
I'm sorry, he went fishing.
Yeah.
On December 24th.
Yes.
Seems like very cold situation.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, clearly he didn't. Because it was a lie.
Yeah. Well, no, that's, yeah.
So when, after she disappeared, she's now 8.5 months pregnant. The neighbor around 10:30 a.m. saw their dog, Mackenzie, a golden retriever, was out in their front yard, like unleashed and like alone. So she figured he just got out of the house or got out of the backyard somehow. So she went and put the dog in the backyard, but she didn't think anything of it because, you know, why would she?
Dogs get out. Yeah.
So then Scott comes back home. It's now, so Scott comes back home and he reports her missing because she didn't return home by 5:15. And so he reports it to the police. The police arrive. They check the home. Lacey's keys, wallet, sunglasses, everything is still at the home. And this is so creepy to me, but the dining room table was meticulously set for a family dinner for the following day. So she was like, either she did this or he did this. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But also the detectives found a phone book on the kitchen counter opened to a full page ad for a defense lawyer. So he was like, oh, maybe I should take this number down just in case.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Really weird. But he was super calm.
He called the lawyer before he called the police.
So ridiculous. So he was like super calm through this. So
dumb.
Yeah. It's so dumb. It's not a smart way to go about.
This podcast is not about how to get away with murder.
No, it's
not. By the way.
But if I could give any tips, it would be don't do that.
Don't leave the phone book open.
So he was really calm, and like this really put off the police officers because they were all like, dude, like your wife is missing. Like your pregnant wife is missing. Like, why are you like sipping tea? Like, he was very calm through this whole thing. Now she's reported missing. He said that he spent the day golfing. So he lied. He said he was going fishing at first, and then when they interviewed him later, he said he was golfing, which he probably...
Two things that, like, why would you do on a cold...
On a cold December day.
December 24th.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's in California. Is he with your family? Because they're in California, so it's not that cold.
It's still, like...
I would say not.
I guess I would believe weather. Golfing more than fishing. Yeah.
It's definitely not fishing weather, but golfing weather, maybe.
I don't know. I don't do either me of those either, things. So I have no idea. No weather is actually golfing or fishing
that's,
weather.
That's a lie, because my boyfriend, he goes fishing in like Alaska, and it's like super
but
cold.
That's like ice fishing. Like, that's like a specific thing. You don't ice fish in California.
True.
You know?
Yeah, true. So they do check her her phone records, and he calls her throughout the day, leaving messages for her. And one of the messages he left at 2:15, and it says, "Hey, beautiful, it's 2:15. I'm leaving Berkeley."
Very suspicious.
Yeah, he's just trying to make it seem like he was not in that area.
Have you ever left a voicemail for like your significant other and said the time in it?
No.
Literally the only time I did that once, I was on a run and I was being followed by a guy wearing this is a whole thing, but I was being followed, and I was calling Gabe, and I was like, this is what time it is, this is the cross streets I am at, because he didn't answer, so I wanted people to know, like, in case they disappeared, that's where I was. They didn't disappear, I'm here.
Yeah,
but that's literally the only time I've done that.
Yeah, no, he was just trying to do it so that people would think that he was not anywhere near her at the time.
Yeah.
So there, the search for Lacey was, as a search for any missing person should be. It included helicopters with searchlights. The police mounted on horseback and bicycles and canine units and water search rescues. A total of 30 officers were employed for the search for Lacey, including a bunch of loved ones and volunteers, including her husband, which is super creepy. There was a $25,000 reward offered. It was later increased to $250,000 and then finally went to $500,000 for any information leading to the safe return of Lacey.
Wow. What did Evelyn have?
Nothing.
Wow.
I'll get into that.
Wow.
So they post flyers, all of that good stuff, which should be done. I'm not saying that this
right.
shouldn't.
They did all the right things.
They did what they
this.
Were supposed to do for Lacey. Lacey should have gotten yeah. that. I'm just pissed that Evelyn didn't. And I feel like Evelyn's case, in a weird way, was a little bit more obvious than Lacey's, other than like Scott, obviously, like he dug his hole from the beginning, like he lied from the beginning, but he was a liar from the beginning. He was cheating on her before right. that happened, so
yeah,
but
not out of character.
Yeah. So April 13, 2003, a couple that was walking their dog finds the decomposing body of Lacey Peterson, as well as her late-term male fetus. The umbilical cord was still attached, but it was torn, not cut or clamped. So obviously there was no, like, she didn't give birth before she passed. So,
yeah.
Her body was decomposed to the point where they couldn't recognize her, because it was so far away. Like, it was April now, so it was months later. Mm-hmm. But the DNA test did confirm that the bodies were, both of Lacey's and her unborn son, Connor.
Oh my God.
The autopsy was performed by Dr. Brian Peterson, no relation to Scott Peterson.
Oh my God, I was about to be like, what?
And he said, quote, "It was her death that caused Connor's death while he was still in the uterus," unquote.
Oh.
Yeah, so the trial was pretty straightforward. I mean, Scott had numerous extramarital affairs. He was arrested with the help of Amber Frey, because she was under the impression.
Yes, Amber.
Yeah, she was under the impression that he was single. So when she saw the news and all of that, she was like, I know that guy, and basically was in cahoots with the police before all this happened. But he.
Yes. See, this is why Ambers are great.
Yeah. but what ended up happening was, like, she was like on a recorded line with him at all times, every time she talked to him on the phone, and he was just, you can hear, obviously, like, you can go online and hear all of his phone conversations. Have listened to them, yes, and they are just fucked up and disturbing, because he's super calm. He makes everything seem like it's no big deal. He wasn't involved. He didn't want to tell her that he was married, but they were eventually going to get a divorce, blah, blah, blah. He's just lying through his teeth, and she knows it, so she's just trying to get information out of him. Scott was arrested on April 18th on a La Jolla golf course, because that's what you do after your wife and unborn kid are murdered.
Yes.
You
are found.
Yeah. You just
go to golf.
You go play golf.
But I will say, April sounds like a good golf month.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed.
Fuck this guy. Wow.
So on November 12th, 2004, Scott Peterson was convicted of first-degree murder for his wife's death and second-degree murder for his son Connor's death. And Judge Alfred A. DeLucci sentenced Scott to death. He called the murder of Lacey, quote, cruel, uncaring, heartless, and callous, unquote. One of the articles that I found that was written by Beth Spotswood, called "The Stories of Lacey Peterson and Evelyn Hernandez Suggest That All Lives and Deaths Are Not Equal." So in contrast to Evelyn's case and Lacey's case, like I said, her case should have been investigated that way. They did find out that it was the husband. But like they had detail down to like what she did all day throughout the day, like time stamped down to a Trader Joe's receipt that she had. And with Evelyn's case, all they had was that she picked up her son. They don't know anything after that point. So the cause of death for both, Evelyn and Lacey was, it was undetermined because, again, you might want to skip 30 seconds if you're uncomfortable with super detail. But Scott Peterson's lawyers requested access to Hernandez's autopsy reports in 2003 because her case happened before Lacey's. There was so much speculation at that point that possibly the person that murdered Lacey and Evelyn were the same person.
I'm sorry, that's dumb.
Yeah, but that's what Scott Peterson's lawyers were trying to do. They were trying to say...
Oh, wow, grasping at straws.
Yeah, they were trying to say
there was a serial killer?
It was
killer.
Like a serial killer kind of deal, so then...
Wow.
But what they found out... I mean, what they found, I feel like if they... I mean, there's no way Scott was going to be able to prove that he didn't do it, but I feel like if there was a juror on the jury that was just trying to stir things up, they could have definitely had enough reasonable doubt to think that these murders were the same. Sorry, this is the part where you might want to skip forward because they only gave...
Oh, yeah, so if you skip forward 30 seconds, we didn't get to...
Yeah, sorry.
Skip forward another 30 seconds.
Sorry about that. According to the book Presumed Guilty, Evelyn, as well as Lacey, had no hands, no head, or feet. And the only difference was they weren't, with Evelyn's case, they weren't able to definitively find out whether the baby was forcibly removed from her, or delivered naturally, or expelled in a coffin birth scenario.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God.
I will only tell you what a coffin birth is if you want to know. Do you want
to
know?
I mean, I can imagine. I feel like I need to know.
Okay. So then if there are people that don't want to hear this part too, please skip forward. A coffin birth, also known as a post-mortem fetal extrusion. Is the expulsion of a non-viable fetus through the vaginal opening of a decomposing body of a deceased pregnant woman. This is a result of the increasing pressure of the intra-abdominal gases. So this kind of post-mortem delivery occurs very rarely during the decomposition of a body.
Oh my God.
Okay, start listening again, peeps. That was rough, but they couldn't determine whether how that happened with Evelyn because her body was obviously so decomposed and they couldn't tell, and the fetus wasn't there. So, I feel like they were leaning more towards the fact that, like, obviously somebody was there when that happened because they took the baby. With Lacey's case, it just... Like, it was probably more of a coffin birth kind of thing.
Oh my God.
I know. It's rough. I'm sweating again. Jesus I don't Christ. Think I'll ever get through say, one of these cases without, like...
I know.
Yeah.
I will say, like, the missing hands and feet and head, that's a thing that happens if a body is sort of, like, dumped or left out, because those are the delicate parts that get detached very easily, like, either by animals or, you know, if they're in water, the motion of the water.
Yeah.
So that is a thing, like... People find, like, feet, you know, sometimes, and no bodies. So that's a thing that happens without it meaning that the bodies were, like, hacked up or anything.
Yeah.
Just putting that out there.
Mm. Oh, my God. Yeah. But the media attention, I just want to focus on that a little bit. So Peterson, unlike Hernandez, had, you know, the advantage of the local and... the community that knew about her, and family, you know, vocal family that were just, like, advocating on her behalf. And, you know, the media responding to that is what, in a way, helped get her case solved. And so when Hernandez got none of that, and she didn't make any news at all, that stopped people from recognizing her and being like, oh yeah, I know that person, or to even help, you know, with the investigation at all.
Yeah. To fill in how she spent her day.
San Francisco Chronicle published 32 stories about Lacey, in the months between her disappearance and the arrest of her husband, Scott Peterson. This included 4 front page reports. The only paper that published, the San Francisco Chronicle also published, stories about Hernandez, but none of them were front page, and there was only 4, but they published 32 about Lacey. And, like, both of their deaths were similar and tragic, but the question that was always raised, during, you know, this, like, the drastic differences in the media attention was, like, where is Alexis? Like, why is nobody asking where this 5-year-old boy is?
Why is that not a huge factor?
And, like, why is that not something that's, like, if you're talking about newsworthy things, like, there's a 5-year-old boy missing still, and nobody is paying attention. And it didn't make national news at all. A bunch of...
And also what's crazy about Lacey and Evelyn, the press coverage, is that you're citing the San Francisco Chronicle, where Evelyn was from, but Scott and Lacey weren't in San Francisco, were they?
No, they were in Modesto.
So it's not even their home paper, true. But it is Evelyn's home paper.
Like, it actually happened in that. Yeah. And the fact that, like, 2 bodies, you know, disposed of in the same way, like, why wouldn't that be something that they catch on to, you know? But I think because Evelyn's murder happened, you know, 6 or 7 months before Lacey's, it was just literally forgotten. Like, nobody...
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if you... Not that this is, like, I'm justifying it, but I guess if they were flipped, maybe that would have been just a way to explain, you know?
But then it's like, I also, though, like, they're similar, like, they're both pregnant, both, you know, young, and disposed of in the same way. But disposed of, like, the way that their bodies were disposed of was not particularly creative.
No.
It wasn't particularly specific, which doesn't, to me, doesn't read like serial killer-y, because it's sort of like, both of them seem like that's the obvious way that you would go about getting rid of a body if you've never done it before and you hadn't put a ton of thought into it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, I think they're very similar in that they're both domestic abuse cases, but I don't know, like, I'm still stuck on Scott Peterson's lawyers trying to make it sound like a serial killer.
a bunch of tabloids, this is like, the tabloids is where the similarities of these cases came out, because they were trying to suggest that they were related. And maybe the person that killed Hernandez also, or I'm sorry, I don't like calling them by their last names. The person who killed Evelyn is the same person that killed Lacey. But none of these, like, the authorities were like, okay, you guys got to stop because that's not what's happening. Like, we know what happened with Lacey. We still don't have any definitive evidence that ties, you know, anybody to Evelyn's case as of yet. So,
yeah.
But, you know, in the fall, like, even now to this day, like, if you Googled Lacey Peterson, I'm not going to name them, but I can name five podcasts that have already done Lacey Peterson's case.
Yeah.
There's A&E aired a multi-part documentary series on Lacey's case 15 years after. So 2007, 3 years ago, wow, they did it, and it's 15 years later. And still, there's not.
2017.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 15 years later, 2017, A&E aired the documentary series, but nothing has ever been put up about Evelyn's case.
Wow. Where are these kids?
I know.
I mean, I feel like what, like, the baby probably could have, like, also passed away.
Yeah, but where's his body? It's not like he was a full term child. Like, there's no reason why
her body would have showed up without him. Animals, and then, like, if it's a coffin birth situation, it's not connected anymore.
Yeah.
And then that's like, is even a full term infant is very small, and they never found her head, which would be almost the same size.
True. It's just disturbing, you know? All around. And
absolutely
every, like, and it just, to me, it's like, you know, it's kind of what we were talking about last week with your case. It's like, you know, if you just give a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it just, yeah, give us a little bit of attention to this one case. Like, you know.
Because you don't know what people know.
Exactly. And
you have to find out.
This is like, I'm just going to, like, talk about a little bit of, like, the failed attempts that they had to, you know, get Evelyn's case out there. So the family did push to get her case featured as much as Lacey's was, because they knew about the similarities in the cases, and they were like, okay, maybe if they knew about Lacey's or Evelyn's case, maybe they would treat it the same and want to find out if there was some connection. And every time they were met with, like, you know, she was a pregnant woman with a child of a married man. Like, we don't want to create media coverage. It's just, it's not in our best interest, kind of thing. And it's like,
are you kidding me?
You know, and not that it's the same, but, like, Scott Peterson cheated on her a bunch. And, like, yeah, no one's stopping that from being known. Like, who cares if she had an extramarital affair? Like, that doesn't mean she should have been murdered, you know? And yeah, it's just like, and
yeah,
it's so crazy how there's this stigma on the other woman that, like, the man gets no, you know, like, he's allowed to cheat all he wants. He's allowed to have, you know, two relationships outside of his marriage, and he's just a murderer. But Evelyn, yeah, is, she wasn't aware that he had a wife. She was just in, right, a relationship with a man, and she's considered a, like, you know, a distasteful story because she,
yeah, a scarlet woman.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. So that's what the media was telling them, like, listen, we don't want to create any, you know, media. It's just not in our best interest, kind of thing.
Wow.
Twiggy Damey, which I pray to God that that's this person's real name, because that is such an amazing name. So Twiggy is one of Evelyn's friends. He's a family friend. He has been advocating for Evelyn since day one. He tried to get her story onto America's Most Wanted, but they were rejected because there weren't any warrants issued for a suspect. But Twiggy was like, but this Lacey Peterson story, which you guys have done, had no suspects and nobody named in that case either, because they hadn't named the husband yet. So he's like,
oh, wow.
What's the difference? And it was just totally shot down.
Wow.
And Holly Parra, I hope that I'm saying her name right. She was the San Francisco police inspector. She was involved in Evelyn's case from the beginning, and she basically was like, I'm haunted by this case still to this day. She's like, I don't understand, you know, why, what the difference was, other than the fact that she was, you know, a woman of color or whatever. So it's just like, it's not mm-hmm. like, what's the difference? And she said, quote, our greatest hope would have been for someone to just say, yes, I saw her here. She was with this person, unquote. And that's what media attention would have brought them. Mm-hmm. And she said, quote, it's embarrassing. We've pushed and asked for and received as much as we possibly could, but we don't make the decisions about what gets covered and what doesn't, end quote. Yeah. So I just threw this in here because it pissed me off. So Aguilera's attorney, because he was really cooperative at first with like authorities and doing interviews, but he was never officially brought in to the police station. He was just questioned at his home. So, but after a while, because he started, I don't know if it was because he started to feel like they were pushing more towards treating him as a suspect, that he lawyered up. So he has his attorney, Robert Tavak, said that at this time, his client had done everything he could to cooperate with the police. And he said, quote, he is deeply saddened by the news of the death of his close friend, unquote.
Oh, my God. Screw you. If that is not a, like, fucking indication of guilt, like,
oh my God,
distancing yourself mm-hmm. from it and like just trying to shove it away and like release responsibility, yeah. like that is so shitty.
It's so
like,
insensitive
that
too.
Was
like
your
now
baby too,
yeah, like it was your child as well. You started a relationship with this person, and now that she's dead and you get away with it, because I absolutely think that you did it, now she's just a close friend. Like, how dare you?
Yeah.
Ugh. It's like a wow. special place in hell for these people, I swear.
Yeah.
So I just, like, basically what I just described, the differences, the stark differences in media coverage and police coverage or police investigations of these two cases is literally what missing white woman syndrome is. So it was a term that's used by social scientists and media commentators to refer to the extensive media coverage, especially in television, of missing person cases involving young, white, upper middle class women and girls. The term is used to describe the Western's media's undue focus on upper middle class white women who disappear, with the degree of coverage they receive being compared directly to cases of missing women of color and missing women mm-hmm. of lower social classes and men or boys, which I never even considered.
I know, I didn't either.
Like, when do you really hear of murders of men? And I mean, yes, boys, most, because, like, I mean, everybody's heard
of
the Atlanta Monster.
You know when I
hear
murders
but...
of men, when it's like snapped women?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I didn't even
That's
think about it.
Very interesting. Yeah. Because it's, I feel like it's still like about like protection and like the mm-hmm. rescuing the princess kind of fairy tales, and who are the princesses? Mm. Upper middle class white women.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Just kidding. True. I don't believe that. Don't use that as a sound clip, anyone.
So, just a couple quotes from Twiggy, because I think it's a guy, actually. I never even looked. Okay, they. I'm going to say they. I really love Twiggy's name, so I have. So, he mm-hmm. said, quote, or they said, quote, this girl, Lacey, she's white, they have money, and there is a family behind her, end quote. So, Hernandez didn't mm-hmm. have family here. Like, she had friends, and she yeah. had people, but there wasn't family here like Lacey had, which... yeah, there's definitely like, you know, like comparing the two, like obviously Lacey had a little bit more going for her, as well as having money and a family backing her through this whole thing.
Yeah. But it's like the squeaky wheel gets the oil, but you have to have the means to have a wheel in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. True. She was a single mother who moved to San Francisco from El Salvador when she was 14. She was looking for what everybody is, you know, the American dream. And he said, quote, "But I guess who cares about Evelyn?" And I was like, oh my God.
No, we care about Evelyn. No,
we do, definitely. He said, "The first time, quote, the first time I heard Lacey's case, I got flashbacks from Evelyn's case. Because it's the same case." He said, "It's very hard to see why one case gets more attention than the other." End quote.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
You know what? It's not hard to see why, but it's hard to accept why.
Yeah.
Because it is unacceptable.
Yeah, it's so sad. I, you know, I wish that there was a way to break down that wall, in a sense, you know. There are so many cases like this, unsolved cases of minorities that are eerily similar to a case of a white woman or man that are unsolved. And, you know, like Detective Para said, all they hope for is somebody to come forward and say, oh yeah, I knew that person and I knew what they did that day. I talked to them or I saw them at this store at this time. You know, she's media coverage gives them leads, and yeah, sometimes those leads lead nowhere. And, you know, you just think that these cases, like the amount of cases that go unsolved, but there was nobody there who knew about them. And then they end up being coined the other, you know? And I know I say this all the time and pretty much every case that we do, but I feel like I have to, like, I feel like I get to know these women through researching them, that I just feel like my heart just goes out to them. And I want to be like, you know, I'm so sorry that this happened to you, you know? And, you know, to Evelyn and Alexis and baby Fernando, I'm so sorry this happened to you. And I'm sorry that, you know, we couldn't find out who did this to you, definitively, I guess. The system, the media, we, all of us have failed you. And to us, you guys will never be just the other. This episode was written and edited by me, Asia Hamilton.
With music by Holly Amber Church.
If you would like to see pictures and sources of today's episode, please follow us on Instagram at DNA_podcast.
Please be sure to rate, review, subscribe to the podcast, and download every episode.
Thank you for listening, and see you next time.